From Relay, this is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 85, recorded a little early, December 13th, 2024. It's our holiday special. I am, as always, your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. And with me, my former TV talk machine compatriot, former TV critic at the San Francisco Examiner, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Hollywood Reporter, where he was chief TV critic. Of course, a pioneer of the podcast medium in those early days of a San Francisco Chronicle podcast. It is Sir Timothy Von Goodman. Tim Goodman.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
And the Bastard Machine Substack, which is where you are now. Tim Goodman. What is it? TimGoodman.substack.com? Yeah.
That's Goodman.substack.com.
I was looking. I cannot believe how many years we did that version 3 or whatever of the TV Talk Machine. Lots.
I know, it was impressive. I was in, you know, it feels like we just hit pause. We didn't really end it.
I mean, yeah.
It will always live on.
It will always live on. But like from, what was it, 2014 to 2020, it was like 7 or 8 years we
did that. That's crazy. Yeah. No, it was fun. It was
the THR years for you.
Yeah.
Basically what it was.
Yeah, the THR years were great on that podcast. Well, also, you know, the early years were good too. But you know,
yeah, it got worse.
Podcast back
people
then.
Who could listen back to that podcast can get the vibe of what was happening there. But the nice thing about it is they had no media strategy for podcasts, so we just did a podcast.
They did too bad for them. No media strategy.
Too bad for them. Well, I wanted you on Downstream because, and it's like. People coming home for the holidays. It's just like feels good. I'm going to put in our show notes links to your two great playlists. Ooh. That are holiday music. You got Merry Christmas, mm-hmm. Baby, and you got Our Silent Nights Are Getting Loud,
mm-hmm.
which is the I think currently updated one. You wrote about this a little bit, as you do every year, I would say, yep. on your Substack. And I have gone to the effort of making the Apple Music copies of them. So people who are on that instead of Spotify can find most. It's like 95% of the tracks are also available on Apple Music. So
that is great.
And that's what I listen to.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day, Jason, when I was doing this, because I was like, you know, when I was putting that back up and writing about Our Silent Nights Are Getting Loud, that historically you have done that. You have, mm-hmm. Reversed engineered it so that it works on Apple. And I've kind of relied on that. And then I was like, wait, where are those? Cause like, it's helpful.
I got them. They'll be in our show notes. And there's a little behind the scenes here. They will also be texted to you right now. So you can send those links, use perfect. Them wherever you like.
Yes, no, that's great.
For the people on the Apple side, it's pretty much everything. I just resynced them today to make sure that they're all there. But it's in good, it's in pretty good condition. So one of the things that's been fun about reading Bastard Machine this year is, and I know this seems kind of wild, but like you got back to watching and writing about television this year.
I did. Yeah.
You did. There was some burnout. That's an understatement of the year.
That's an understatement. Yeah.
Some burnout of writing about television and watching television and all those things. But this year you did some box sets. You've talked about, you know, there's shows that you've done the 2-episode test, which we talked about, I think the last time you were on this podcast,
mm-hmm.
Which I love, right? Because I'm a real big believer that the pilot is non-representative, even though a lot of shows don't do pilots anymore, but like episode 1 is non-representative. And so you really need to kind of give it another one. And then it's time to start making a decision about, am I in or am I out for a given show? And you've done that for a bunch of stuff too this year. It's really great.
Yeah. I love that feature. And even recently I've kind of sort of slipped into the 1-episode thing just to sort of like, as a kind of a nod to everybody's lack of time. But yeah, the 2-episode test has served me well. Definitely.
I think so. So I'm going to throw some shows at you. I'm going to also have a list of shows that are like, you always used to be made to do lists. I don't know if you're going to, are you going to actually try to do a favorite shows list this year? Or is that just too scary, too burnouty?
I've come a long way from the burnout phase. Okay. And part of that was because the, you know, the industry itself is sort of collapsed itself, mm-hmm. into itself. It's imploded. And as somebody who was trying to write shows and did work there and still wants to, it's just, it's such a bad time there to get anything done. Particularly in my situation, where the odds were pretty low. I mean, the odds of getting any show made, no matter who you are, is low anyway. But, you know, I'm not looking to get a job on somebody else's show to be on a writing staff, probably a little old for that anyway. But, you know, if you're just doing it yourself, which is what I started at FX and continue when I'm sending things out, it'd still just be my stuff. That just lowers the odds that much more. And with all the contraction and less series getting greenlit, especially, you know, series that don't have original IP, it's hard. So yeah, I find myself writing more about television itself and film and other things, and have a weird consulting like side gig, which basically is like being a TV critic again. You know, I just,
my, you're still doing that where they hire you to review their shows before they're out.
I'm still doing that. I actually, you know, I try to keep it to 10 or so a year, but it picks up. I'm on my third one of the like last 3 weeks.
Wow.
You know, so they just want to, you know, they call and they want to know about what I think about the show, and they want to know,
now, this is late stage enough. Is this more about like, what are our marketing pitfalls and minefields that we should try to avoid, or that we need to disclose, or we need to spin it in a certain way? Or is it earlier in the process where they still have some ability to maybe make changes to the actual product?
That's a great question, because it used to be later in the game, and now they're doing this. I think the one that I'm about to give them feedback on isn't even really tentatively scheduled until March of 2025. So they could potentially make some changes. I know that I just did one, which I'm not allowed to, well, I'm not allowed to talk about any of these by name, but I just did one where it was very valuable to them, the feedback, because according to them, and that's not me saying that about my own work, they're just, it was a very challenging series to get a grip on. It also has a terrible title, and they were curious about that. So I confirmed to them that yes, it's terrible, and it will cause you lots of problems unless you can change it, which I don't know if they would do, but they have the ability to do that. I think they're out in enough time to change it. So I think that's probably why they were asking. And so I don't know. We'll see. If I was them, I would change it, because it's, you know, it's very Terriers-esque.
They're looking for validation sometimes. And this is what I tell people about when I write about tech stuff, when I write about Apple. Like, Apple doesn't pay me to just give them criticism behind the scenes. Then that would be an interesting gig. But what they do, what I say to people is, when I write critical things about Apple, what's really happening is not, oh no, Jason doesn't like this thing, we better do something. That's not what it is. Mm-hmm. What it is there somebody inside who's been fighting for this thing? And internal voices are not often listened to. But if an internal voice can say, see, he agrees with me, I am right, then there's something there. And I wonder if there's some aspect of that where it's like, it's actually easier to have somebody on the external side validate some feelings that are going on the inside, where it's like, well, we don't know about this title. Is different than, look, we talked to our consultant and this title sucks. That's like, that's better.
Yeah, no. And I think that, you know, I thought at the beginning, I know that some other people do it, but especially with the contraction of the industry, I feel kind of lucky, because I'm getting asked very frequently to do these things. I can't do them all. But I think what has happened too, which benefits me, is that there's just not a ton of great criticism out there.
That's true.
You know, there's just not. And there's a handful of really good people, but they're all working. So, you know, I'm just in a really good place where they trust my opinion, and they don't normally, they don't for some other people who would be up for that gig. And so I think that that's why I'm getting them earlier. So if there's changes that might need to be made or just taken into consideration, I don't know if they'll change the title on this, I guess we can talk about that later if it happens. Mm. But I definitely think that they know about it. They know that it's a reach. And so I generally ask whatever outlet it is, platform, a studio, like, you know, I'll just give you a straight ahead review of what I would normally have written, but I'll also answer, you should send me like direct questions. Like,
yeah,
what 5 to 10 or 12 questions do you, you know, want answered? Usually people have like 5 or 6. And in this particular one, they had like 12 that they wanted. And they were right. It's the series itself is going to be a hard to position and explain to people. And the title doesn't help. So they're in kind of a jam. So we'll see.
See, that's really telling, though, because not only do they have to come to you, but if they come to you with those specific questions, it shows you what doubts that they've got internally. Yes. And they're mm-hmm. looking for some sort of like external validation, or like, are we crazy? Do we see this thing here? And you can say, no, I think it's, you're another pair of eyes. I think it's fine. Or you could say, no, you're exactly right. This is a problem. Or yeah. I suppose the other thing that happens is you highlight a problem that they didn't know they had. So that's also good. So you have multiple clients for this? I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but it's kind of cool, right? It's like secret behind the scenes inside TV criticism is really an interesting idea that they actually even listen. So it's multiple.
Yeah, I didn't know that field was really available until I was, quit and was doing other stuff. And they all reached out to me and I was like, what? Has this always existed? Hmm. You know, this is like, you know, it's a pretty good, it's a good side gig. It's helping me when I need to do it. And I don't have to like do 100 of them. Right.
Right.
So I'm working on other fiction
so
stuff.
Is it multiple clients? Not just
yeah,
one.
It's multiple clients.
That's awesome. That's
yeah,
great.
It's across the board. It's broadcast and streaming and networks. So it's, our cable channels. So it's, okay. It's really interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. It's, I would say that there's one place that I used to do a bunch of stuff for, like a lot, and I don't do as much for them anymore. And it's probably because I hated one of their shows and the show turned out to be an enormous hit.
Oh
yeah. But that doesn't make it a good show.
Well, that's
it makes
true.
It a popular show. It doesn't make it a good show. No, I think they are just bringing a lot more stuff in house and not going out house as much. But I thought that was kind of funny because it did sort of correspond to me really disliking the show and then it becoming.
The problem with that is bringing it in house. That's doesn't help.
Like, it doesn't help. You're just going to get yeses.
That's the whole point is that you want somebody who's on the outside.
Yeah.
And that's I. It is a funny thing. So I don't know if you've seen it. I'm going to take it back because I know what you're going to say about the show that I'm going to mention here that I've seen people talking about.
Okay.
Because it reminds me of how you talked about Bosch on Prime Video, which is, hooray, you've managed to create a CBS show on Prime Video, a network TV show, now on streaming. Yay, good for you, right? That was basically the classic Tim
very accurate
review of Bosch, which is like, what are we doing here? We're in this area of premium television. I don't want to watch network TV anymore. And then now the streamers are like, but we want you to watch our show that's like network TV, which I mean, that's been proven right to a certain extent. I think that Amazon has really kind of doubled down on a lot of dad TV.
Mm-hmm.
For that very reason, which is like, well, it works for CBS. Maybe it'll work for us too. And to a certain degree, it does. Anyway, I've seen multiple people write about this show and what they and invariably they're like embarrassed that they like it because they say it's not good, but it's something that they watch anyway. Like it's not good, but it's I don't even know what you would say. It's compulsive viewing regardless. And it's you will not be surprised that it's a Taylor Sheridan. It is Special Ops : Lioness. Which is essentially, it's on Paramount Plus. It's it's Taylor Sheridan's show. It's essentially a CBS show with movie stars in it, right? Mm. It's a CBS show, but it's got Zoe Saldana and Nicole Kidman. And it just makes me laugh because, I mean, first off, if you like it, you should just admit it. You shouldn't say, no, it's bad, but I watch it. Like, I don't know if I believe you. But I think it's really interesting And that's a good example of a show that's bad. Probably, you know, even the people who like it admit that it's bad, but it's a hit. So right. It's like, okay, I mean, bad stuff can be a hit. It's fine. You know, the Taylor Sheridan thing, I don't entirely understand it, and that's fine. That's me. Not everybody needs to like everything. But right. I do wonder, it's like the concept of the guilty pleasure. It's like, well, no, you either like it or you don't. Don't feel guilty pleasure is like, I know I shouldn't like it, but I do. It's like, well, then you should say you like it. Like, stand by it. If you like it, you can like garbage.
Yeah, I think that. If yeah, there's two, I think there's two ways to look at that, right? Though, because it's like you want to, as a critic, stand by all the shows that you're endorsing. Because if you don't, you're never going to go on an island and be the guy who's wrong or the woman is wrong.
Right.
You're going to, or you know, because you know what I mean? Like, you could hate a show that literally everyone, I mean, you could hate like a classic show and you could be wrong. You're just dead wrong in public at that point. But you could also, you know, it's the flip of like being the first person to really endorse a show, which is a much better position to be in, right? Where that no one knows about, and then eventually everybody loves, and then eventually becomes a classic. You were one of two or three people who were right there at the beginning. But sometimes you have to be on an island, and so I think there's that. I kind of had that a little bit sometimes when I was a critic, where you would just be like, you know, I probably shouldn't like this, but. You know, but I do. So I don't know about guilty pleasures. I just feel like now that I'm not doing it as my primary career, I just take a different look at things. You know, I understand how hard it is to make these things. And so I'm looking at it more. I don't think I'm giving anybody any free passes, but I'm just not for my Substack. I'm generally not reviewing something that I'm doing just, I know it's terrible and I'm going to do it.
That's what the client paying clients are for. See, they can pay you. It's like, you couldn't pay me to watch. Well, actually you could pay me to watch this, but you'll need to.
I don't go out of my way to find bad stuff, but
exactly how I do it.
I'll note that.
Unless it's super, super high profile and everybody wants to know about it. Like, basically it's like the great job is saying, hey, here's a thing I found that's great. Right. That's the joy is saying, here's a thing I liked. Not I went out of my way to find a thing. And sometimes it doesn't work out. Right. But why go try something that, you know, you're going to hate just so you can give it a kick? Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
Life's too short for that. I think
life's too short. And that's just, you know, the series that I'm mentioning on we can say it. It's Disclaimer on Apple TV Plus, you know. And yeah, you're drawn to it. I was drawn to it because I was like, wow, Alfonso Cuarón and
right.
It's just all these great actors and actresses in it. And you're like, this is going to be amazing. And it's based, I didn't read the book, the source material, but I thought, oh, this is going to be fantastic. And I don't do a lot of negativity on my thing because life's too short, as you say, but this is one everybody wanted to watch.
Yeah,
and I would say this is the most disappointing series of 2024.
I'm fascinated by it because I did see some initial reviews that were really positive, but I've also, and I was like, okay, I'm going to put it on my list and I'm going to watch that. And then I've since seen so many reviews of it that are so scathing. I'm laughing here. The New Yorker headline is literally a baffling misfire from a great auteur. Ooh, baffling misfire, man. But like, I get it. People can have different takes on it, but that's, so high profile that it's like, how can you not talk about it again?
That's when you kind of have movie stars,
famous directors doing TV.
Right. You just have to like address that it's there.
Recently I was reading, I mean, I am a subscriber to the Bastard Machine, but I was reading, an interesting thing. So we I think both really like Slow Horses.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Great. You were I got to see it a little early, which was fun.
Yes.
It's nice when I you're going through Silo, which we'll talk about in a second. And I slow binged through Silo, and you're kind of like, because you're writing the box set series on your Substack about Silo. So you need to I just watch it and I'm like, yeah, that was great. And you have to like write a piece about it. So you're taking it slower than me. But I also
I forget everything, but I am jealous that you finished it
and Slow Horses too. But what I am interested in is it feels like Slow Horses has actually had a little bit of an impact where other streamers are like, can we do Slow Horses? Do we have a thing like Slow Horses that we could put into production? And there were a few of these like spy shows, assassins and spies and things like that that are happening. I think is it Amazon that literally has a British spy show that is like what if Slow Horses but on a different streamer. I can't remember what show that is.
I think people I don't read a ton of other reviews, but I actually love Black Doves, which was
Black
on,
Doves is the one yeah, that I was yeah and, you've been writing about it.
I love it and I binge through it. It's massively entertaining, and it's funny because you brought it up because
it's Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, and they do a lot of the shows like this now. But I did catch a comment somewhere where someone said, oh, it's like, this is like badly done Slow Horses. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because I love Slow Horses, but there is an implausibility factor in that series as well.
And, sure.
Yeah.
The one I'm thinking of is The Agency, which is a Paramount. I mean, it's Showtime, but it's Paramount Plus at this point.
Yes.
And that is the one that I was told was basically like really, really badly wants to be Slow Horses right down to the opening credits. I haven't watched it. I think the reviews were middling. But because that one's, again, movie stars showing up. That's George Clooney produces that, but it's got like Michael Fassbender and Jeffrey Wright in it.
Yeah. And also, it's like loaded with stars.
Yeah. I mean, so many of these shows are. But Black Doves is good, you say.
Oh, I loved Black Doves. Like immediately, okay. Like, yes, I think everybody should go out and just binge it. It's just really well done. It's Joe Barton who did Giri Haji, which is one of the most it's the undiscovered and underappreciated series that only got one season. It's on Netflix. You can watch that season. I would recommend everybody do it. And, it's Japanese and British. So it's called Giri Haji. Hagi, and everybody was gutted that it didn't get a second episode. I came to it late because people had already discovered it, and so when I knew that he was doing Black Doves, I was like, oh well, I love that guy, I'm gonna watch his work. And you know, it's got Keira Knightley in it, and it's got Sarah Lancashire from Happy Valley and Ben Whishaw, who's been in so many great things. And I just loved it, and it actually strikes this great balance of there is believability, but they also, you know, they just, instead of it being like The Diplomat, which is a show I also like, it's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I wrote in my take on Black Doves that, The Diplomat has to stay more grounded because it's really about these countries. And it's, you know, you are a U.S. diplomat, and so you can't really go too far afield. But whereas Black Doves, it's like a secret spy organization. So, you know, yeah, you do, you create something like that so that creatively you can have more fun. Mm. And so Black Doves does have more fun, and but it's really well done. And there is some really funny parts in it. There's some ultra violent parts in it. And the story is actually good. I'm super happy that it was renewed for a second season. And I think people are being overly, if they don't like it, they're being like overly critical about it, the shortcomings of it, which I think are not that many, especially when you get the tone. Like, it's trying to be, it's serious, but it's not trying to be that serious. So
yeah, I definitely want to check it out. The Diplomat, I appreciate The Diplomat, although short season, and I felt like almost like they were taken aback. It felt like a combination of like, where do we go from here from season one? And also that maybe there were some real availability issues and maybe it was related to strike stuff, but it's a kind of feels like a truncated season. And apparently they're already shooting a third season. So I wonder if there were just some production issues there. I liked it. It continues to be The West Wing meets a thriller. Felt like they got trapped in their plot a little bit in season two, where one of the joys of season one was that there could be sort of incidental things that happen. Like, I love that it's about this tough woman from who's always sent to brutal locations, who suddenly is in a place that's much more ceremonial, and like she had no idea, like she can handle herself in Afghanistan, she can handle herself, But when it comes to like picking a dress for a ceremony with the prime minister, she is like completely at sea. I think that's so fun as an idea. Yep. And season two, like there's a little of that, but mostly the plot is so cranked up that it just sort of has to go with the, you know, every episode is like the thriller plot line continues. But it's a really, I mean, from a West Wing producer, right? It really is a slick, well-produced show in the vein of something like The West Wing. So I really like it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's and you can see how shows like that get made. It's professionally done. It's compelling. It's interesting. But you run into some issues. I'm always interested lately about what is getting made. Mostly it's been the stuff that I've been watching, and I don't know what your list contains, but I've been watching so much stuff from Asian countries, at least recently, and the international series have just been, I think, really outstanding. I can't even keep up with them. So even though I know we're having like a reduction in shows and the pipeline's a little clogged up and probably going to be continuing to see reductions and less greenlit mm-hmm. shows on the US, you know, it's been more than made up for internationally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the beauty of some of these streaming platforms being truly international, like Netflix, Prime Video, Apple TV, all kind of have international worldwide ambitions. And one of the, and in some markets, mandatory content generation, right? Like you've got to make a certain amount in this market. But as a result, you can end up with some really great stuff that, you know, previously, and you know this from all your time as a TV critic, stuff gets made in other countries. And it's like the United States is like, no, not interested. We make it here and export it to you. Why would we import anything? And as a result, like our TV fare is richer than it's ever been. I know when Julia did this show with me, like she always talked about Netflix's development internationally, especially in markets like South Korea and Japan, but just more generally, you've got businesses that are more aligned with the world instead of just being a TV network in the US and saying, well, it's hard to import shows into the US. And you know, as a result, you look at Apple, you look at Amazon and Netflix, like they have big shows with big budgets that they're premiering, and they're, you know, maybe they're dubbed, maybe they're subbed, maybe they're a combination of languages, which is kind of a delightful thing to do. Mm-hmm. That I've really enjoyed, shows that are not afraid to have multiple languages, and you just go with it, and like it's great to see. And it's not just seeing other people who look different and people from a different part of the world, but also, you know, storytelling choices that are different and interesting.
Absolutely. Especially because it reflects the culture that what we're unfamiliar with. I mean, half of watching a international series is enjoying the travelogue aspect of it. Like, oh, I want to go to Tokyo really badly, and this show is all over it, or Paris, or what have you. But like,
I didn't love that, the Rashida Jones Apple TV show, Sunny.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Didn't love it. It kind of intriguing, but just sort of leaden and just sort of didn't work for me. But you know what I did like about it is I like that it was really in Japan and felt really Japanese, and a lot of characters spoke Japanese, and you know, Rashida Jones speaks English, but like that was my favorite part of it, was that it just felt very different because it's a Japanese TV show, and you know, I like that about it. It's really nice.
Oh yeah. And it's really interesting because you mentioned that both like Netflix, of course, because they have international stuff, and Amazon Prime, and what's the other one you mentioned?
Maybe Apple.
And Apple, right. They're all willing to take on as partners, or even just as the place that presents them, this international film fair. They're very, I think that's the 20, you know, it's always been a robust business, but I think from starting in like 2022, it's really increased, and it's just gaining strength, which I don't think is great for our industry here, but it's great for viewers. And, you know, it's interesting because internationally there's no Hulu. So a lot of these shows are on Disney in other parts of the world. And then they sometimes just end up on Hulu over here, especially because, you know, I think Disney is much more protective of its family brand in the States.
A lot less so, though. I mean, basically the bundle is merging everything into Disney Plus in the US too, the Hulu bundle. And yes. I feel like that's going to continue. So it's kind of, they're kind of over it. But there was that period where they're like, oh no, we can't have adult content in the Disney Plus app. And it feels really over now. Like,
yeah, it's, I think that, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been that way in Europe for a while, but,
right.
You know, Hulu had Moving, which is the series that, I wrote about it. I don't know if you know this series on Hulu. I think it came out in 2022. I think it did. Mm. It is a South Korean series, sci-fi series, which is why I think you would like it. It's basically like a Korean Heroes mixed with like Lost.
Oh, I have heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it took me like an episode to, because I watch everything in the native language and then subtitles. So it took me a little bit to sort of kind of figure out what they were doing. I liked it immediately, but even within like two or three episodes, while I liked those episodes, I was like, they were telling stories in a different way that we just don't tell here. And the pacing was really interesting too. It's like, and then it switches up its pacing and its backstories in the middle of its run. And I thought it was 10 episodes and two seasons. It was actually one season, 20 episodes. And it is like one of the best things I've seen this year. Hmm. And even though it came out in 2022. And so I got on the bandwagon late, but I wrote about it constantly. I was like, oh my God, Moving on Hulu. I just love this South Korean or Korean series. I mean, it's obviously a South Korean series if it's a Korean series.
Well, a North Korean series would be quite a,
that'd be quite an interesting
breaking news.
Dramatic turn.
Streaming series.
But, just the news of like, well, now it's probably been a couple of weeks, but that has been given a second season. And I guess Korean shows, I know somebody who's in Korea now and he's follows the industry and he says it tends to just be large numbered, but one season and they move on kind of like the Brits do with their six or, and then whatever. But so it got this like, renewal because Disney said it was one of their most popular series worldwide. So Korea is really making, and Japan too, they're making series that are really capturing the imagination of people around the globe. And it shouldn't be a surprise, particularly out of Korea with their, you know, their long history of great films, but they're killing it in television. And I loved Moving. Right. And I'm not even like a huge sci-fi person. And even though I was like, well, that's a lot like Heroes. And then this is a lot like, it's kind of like Lost, but it was their different thing, you know, it was their own, spun into their own storytelling tendencies or patterns, which are different from ours, which are amazing. But also you just felt that culture. And you could sense, you know, some American stuff in there. Although, you know, Korean films have been as violent as American films for a long time now. They really, really liked that part of our lives.
Oh yeah.
But Moving is great. I watched it, the more I got into it. I'm very happy that it's going to get a second season, but there's 20 episodes on Hulu and they just buried it. So it's really hard to find.
This episode is brought to you by Tracked, your streaming sidekick. It's like having a super smart friend who knows everything about what you're watching. It's ideal for those times when you're thinking, what should I watch next? There is so much to love about Tracked. They've got this great new feature, Streaming Scrabble. That's right. It automatically tracks everything you're watching on platforms like Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, and more. You don't have to log anything manually. Just relax and enjoy your shows. They have a global streaming guide, which will tell you exactly where to find your favorite shows and movies, no matter where you are in the world. And you can keep your must-watch list organized and at your fingertips on your watch list. No more scrolling endlessly through streaming services. And we're getting to the end of the year. Their year in review is really cool. What better time to dive into your viewing stats and discover fun facts about your watching habits? It's like a personal Netflix Wrapped or Spotify Wrapped, you know, just for you. Just for you. I think Tracked is really great. My wife and I struggle with what to watch next. What have we caught up on? What are we missing episodes for? And Tracked can solve that problem so easily, so conveniently. The best part, it's available pretty much everywhere on the web, on Android, on iOS, even on Apple TV. It's your pocket-sized TV guru, always ready to make your streaming life easier and more fun. So go to tracked.tv/downstream. That's T-R-A-K-T tracked.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on Tracked VIP. That's tracked.tv/downstream for 50% for the first year. Thank you to Tracked for supporting Downstream.
I feel like that's a good segue to what I think is maybe the show of the year for, you know, awards wise, and it's probably my favorite show of the year, and it falls into this category, although in a very strange way, and that is another Hulu production. It's Shogun, which first off, Justin Marks, the showrunner, we know because he did Counterpart, one of the great unnoticed, unloved, brilliant shows that people should find and watch both seasons. And he was brought in, I think his wife was working on this show, and they brought him in and they redeveloped it. But the beauty of it, and I loved Shogun start to finish. I really loved it. I love that it is a more, in some ways, modern, but also in some ways more faithful adaptation of the book, where almost every character is Japanese and speaks Japanese. And there's one guy who speaks, I guess, Dutch, but they have him speak it in English, and there's a translator, but it's really, really mostly in Japanese. And that they used Japanese consultants and Japanese actors, and they translated the scripts into, not just into Japanese, but into the Japanese language that's used when Japanese productions of samurai epics, it's like us having Shakespearean dialogue, like they translated it in that way. And then they shot it in British Columbia, but it's doubling for the pre-industrial Japanese coastline. And like, it all comes together, some great performances in there. And I just, and obviously incredibly expensive, but it was a hit. It was a huge hit. It was obviously a huge risk for FX and Hulu, but it worked, and it's going to win a lot of awards and, you know, and get, it's going to be on all the critics list. But like, I really did love it. I think it's a great example of what might have been a misguided kind of US only production that instead really does seem like it was a joint venture between Japanese creative people and American creative people in building a, you know, the right kind of show. I don't know how you feel about Shogun, but for me, it's probably number one on my list.
It's, you know, Shogun, it's one of those, I liked it. It's kind of funny. There's the, you can, I always try to tell people this. I think people who read my stuff a lot, especially lately, on Substack, I'm always saying that, you know, even when I like something, it's you have to be honest as the, you know, a critic, and to be helpful to people who are reading, you have to point out or sort of dissect why you like something, or you're worried in the moment. You know, like, it's a little bit of a cheat to watch something. You know, when I was a critic, you would get so many episodes for the most part on these streaming ones where you kind of knew how the season went, whether it got better in the fourth episode, which is something we used to hate. Now it's very standard. And then, you know, it's easy to form an opinion when you've watched eight episodes and maybe there's 10, but you got the first eight. I think as viewers watch it, as real people watch it, you're kind of making the decision week to week whether you want to keep going. And so that's how I was doing Shogun, and all the shows I watch now, I do it that way. And so I was a little concerned with the pacing, because it's, you know, again, I made note, like, maybe I'm just not in the mood for it to be this slow. I hope it picks up the pace. Hope, you know, we do this, you know, we move in this direction. But ultimately, when it was all said and done, I loved it. I loved Shogun. So, but I think for some people who saw a lot of episodes early, they were much more favorable than my earlier ones. I was like, well,
if you take a week to week and episode to episode, you get to the end of an episode, and do you feel like, did we accomplish anything here?
In some ways, as a critic, I think that gives me a better chance to, a more honest chance to sort of like go through and say, is this working? You know, I think that's very true of watching The Bear this year, the second season, with all its flaws. The more you watched it week to week, you could say, oh yeah, this is why it's not working. And because, you know, and also I was able to tell people kind of why it wasn't working, because they had to get to a third season.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that they ordered two seasons, and so he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to slow the plot down, as the old MST3K joke.
Slow
the plot down. Yeah, that's what they did. You know, I like The Bear. I like it. I think it's a really well-made show that's trying to challenge himself and trying to challenge the audience a little bit. And like, I liked it, but at the same time, it wasn't like the first season was kind of magical in a way mm-hmm. that the second season, I could feel the pressure to try yeah. and top the first season or replay mm-hmm. The tricks that the first season did in a second season. And I mean, there are a bunch of moments in the second season. I enjoyed watching the second season of The Bear, but it did feel like it was not able to recapture that magic that, you know, which is hard. I get that it's hard, but I don't know. It felt like it just couldn't do it.
Yeah, it was a bad season. And that doesn't mean it's going to be a bad show. You just had a bad season, and it's, you know, I've done enough of this to know that really structurally the problem was they didn't move it forward, and they stalled yeah. for most of their episodes stalled. Because they knew they had to sort of, they just didn't balance it correctly. The pacing is off.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you watch it, you see it and you're just like, man, you're trying too hard. And then everything that wasn't working stands out more when you're at a glacial pace and your characters are sort of like spinning in mud and you're like, it's not working. It's yeah. for me, but I have faith that they could come back very strongly in a third season. So I'm not writing them off.
Yeah. And they had some solid episodes. I think that's the other thing, is that is a decidedly episodic show. And some of those episodes were great. Just like the first season, some of those episodes were fantastic.
But yeah.
As a whole, it did feel like the ongoing story ground to a halt or got really spotty, where it was sort of like really slow for a while. And then there are jumps and you're like, wait, we spent so much time in this part and now we're jumping to this part so we can get to Sugar having a baby. Even though Abby Elliott,
exactly,
so good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She's so good. Yeah. So see, what else did I put on I have a list.
I want to hear it.
It's still forming. Like I haven't made cuts or anything, but I was really trying to, like, first off, it's like, what did I watch? And then it's like, what did I like? What did I watch? And you know, it's really mm-hmm. hard to go through. You at least you could go through all your old reviews.
Yeah. It's a little easier for that.
And here's the funny thing. Mm-hmm. Shogun, I think I've probably got up toward number one. That's a Hulu show. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of Apple TV shows on here because I think Apple just creatively has done some great work. I mean, they've done some bad shows too, but I think they've done a bunch of really good shows. And the struggle that I have is that nobody's heard of them, which is frustrating because some great stuff that I, you know, if only Apple knew more about marketing.
Yes, that's true. I think they're addressing that.
Only there are more ads from Apple.
So it's in a subculture. Okay. It's in this little like bottled up universe where it's hard to see the ads for them.
I have five Apple shows on my list.
Oh, shoot. Let me hear.
Okay. So first off, a little sci-fi, another book adaptation, like Shogun, another book adaptation where they're going to make another season, even though there isn't another book. It's Dark Matter, which I loved.
Okay. All right.
With Jennifer Connelly.
Okay.
That is a show that you think it's going to be one kind of show, and then you think it's going to be another kind of show. And then when you realize what kind of show it's threatening to be, you think there's no way they're going to commit to that. They're going to pull off and do something easier, and they commit to it.
Wow.
And so I really, it's a multiverse. I mean, it's got a great elevator pitch, which is, what if one day another version of you comes and kidnaps you and steals your life? That's the elevator pitch.
Okay.
But right. And you get to the moment where you're like, okay, so he's from a parallel universe and he's found a way in, but like in the end, this all, and no, it's like, no, they're going to lean into parallel universes. That's going to be a thing. It's not just the two. It's going to be an infinite number. It's going to ask lots of questions about identity. I really liked it.
And I have not taken to that because my partner, she loves Dark, the Netflix series that's super complicated for
the
three
German time travel people. Series.
Mm-hmm.
Because time travel is much simpler in German. It's Anyway, it's Jennifer Connelly and Joel Edgerton. Jimmy Simpson is in it. I love Jimmy Simpson. We love Jimmy Simpson here, don't we? You know, Perpetual Grace Limited, and of course, you know, yeah. I mean, Jimmy Simpson is great. Dark Matter. It's good. It's good, and it is kind of dark, but it's like a family drama, and it's an emotional drama, and also a totally bananas sci-fi drama at the same time. But sci-fi of this very specific thing, which is alternate version of yourself, and mm-hmm. how do you get back home when you're stuck in a parallel universe, and different versions of characters. So characters die, and then you meet different versions of those characters, and it's right. just I thought it was great. Other Apple TV shows: Bad Monkey, Bill Lawrence, the Vince Vaughn vehicle. Vince Vaughn perfectly deployed. Bill Lawrence knowing exactly how to get tone right, which I think is his secret sauce. I mentioned this to Joe Adalian a few weeks ago on this on this podcast. I think Bill Lawrence is really great at tone in both Shrinking on Apple TV Plus and in Bad Monkey, especially, where he's taking a Carl Hiaasen novel. So it's sleazy Florida, laid back, but also crime. And I was not expecting to love Bad Monkey. I loved Bad Monkey. I thought it was fantastic, like perfect, like drinking a pina colada or something. It was just like on a hot day.
Okay. I have to say I didn't quite get hooked as you did, and I gave up, but okay.
Oh yeah, I really liked it, start to finish, the whole thing. Okay. Slow Horses is an easy one.
Yeah, well, that's kind of universally acclaimed.
I mean, it's so good. I love that Gary Oldman has discovered that the nice thing about television is you can play the same character with different scenes, whereas in stage plays you play the same character but they're just doing the same thing every night, and in films you play that one character and then that's it and it's over, whereas he just gets to do different stuff with Jackson Lamb all the time, and he's like, oh, I kind of like this. It's like, yeah, Gary Oldman, that's television acting. Welcome, you're great. You're a good actor. Now you get to
love
this.
That series,
it's so good. Silo, we should talk. So you're deconstructing Silo on Bastard Machine.
Oh my god, I love Silo. Yeah.
And I was really hesitant. I read the book. I was really hesitant with that first season. There is when you watch enough sci-fi like I do, there's a little ennui that creeps in about the post-apocalyptic fight for control, bad people in charge, other people doing an uprising. Sort of the dissolution of society and what that means. Like, there's so many different versions of it. It gets tiring after a while. It's one of the reasons why I got tired of The Walking Dead after a while. I was like, boy, more of this. And then we're going to a new town that's got a guy in charge who seems nice, but is actually an evil fascist and is going to...
With another place we shouldn't stay, but we do stay.
But we do, and just for the drama, and it happens again. And so I went into Silo thinking, oh, is this what this is? But it's so much better than that. It is... In part because of the way that it's the story is laid out, in part because of the boldness of it. It feels like in season one of Silo, they there's the trick where they kill a character off that you think is going to be in the show, but in the pilot you kill them off.
Yeah,
you know, Silo does that, and you're like, okay, Silo, I see your game. In episode two, they do it again. Episode three, they do it again. Episode four, they do it again. There are four dead bodies in four episodes where you're like, oh, to the point where I started to think, who dies at the end of every episode, but they do, the body count slows down after that, but
it makes you wonder though.
It's impressive.
On edge as a viewer. It's daring.
It is. And it just, it's got a good cast. I've seen some people complain about season two's pace being slower, and it is, but I'm curious what you think about it. I feel like it kind of has to happen that way because they're essentially now telling two storylines in parallel. And so you've got your main character who is off on her own. They obviously, it must have been weird for Rebecca Ferguson to shoot an entire season basically without her cast from season one, because they're in the other half of the show from her.
Yeah.
But without getting too in detail, but I feel like, I think having seen the whole season, I think they did a great job of kind of keeping the motion forward as much as they could. But the fact is, anytime you've got, this is the problem with shows that have like five different storylines. This is the problem with Game of Thrones for a long time, is that House of the Dragon is a great example of this, where it's not as good as Game of Thrones. I still think it's watchable, but the problem is you get five different storylines happening and you keep cutting between them and there's no momentum because you won't, every week you only get 10 minutes or 8 minutes with each storyline. And this is not true with Silo, but in season two, it is half speed from season one because there's two storylines.
I just think they're doing a great job of it. So far, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, I think, what are we for? I mean, I know you're done, but I think there's four episodes that, and maybe the fifth drops tonight. I can't remember.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It is slower, but it's okay. Slow's not bad.
No.
Slow's only bad when it's pointlessly slow. And I think that you struck a good note where you said sometimes when you have too many characters, I mean, that was the problem on Lost ages ago, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You couldn't tell a story because you had to tell everybody's story.
You have to serve every single one of those stories every week.
We just, you know, I mean, yeah. And you hit it on the head with Game of Thrones. That was one of the problems. There's so many great characters. At the end, you're just kind of splicing together.
Yeah.
Was that four for you, or did you have more?
I liked, and I know that that people kind of like were like, yeah, it's fine and all that. But I was stuck on a plane and watched all of Masters of the Air, which is third installment of the Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg World War II stories thing.
Yes.
I thought it was really good. I thought they managed to establish some interesting characters and also give you a real sense of the terror of flying missions over Europe, in World War II, which was something I hadn't really thought about how terrifying that would be. And that show makes a pretty good case for it. And I mean, I enjoyed The Pacific. I enjoyed Band of Brothers. I enjoyed, what is the other one that they did? Band of Brothers was the movie. They did The Pacific and they did. No, it was.
Yeah, no,
it was Band of Brothers. That's right. It was because they did Saving Private Ryan, which was the movie. And then they're like, this is great. Let's make more of these. And they did Band of Brothers, The Pacific, and then Masters of the Air. I thought it was good. I liked all three of them. I'm firmly in middle-aged dad territory saying I liked a thing about World War II, but I liked it. It was, I thought, really well made and really did give you that sense of, you get the camaraderie, you know, a lot of these guys aren't going to make it. And like the challenges of, and the technical challenges too, I thought were really interesting about like how to fly those missions and what happens when things go wrong and how you've got people who are trying to like keep the planes flying when they've got holes in them and they've got things leaking out of them. And like, yeah, I thought it was really good. So I'm going to surface it. I think that they did a good job with it. So that's a whole bunch of Apple shows.
I can't pass any judgment on it because I didn't, I never started out. Yeah. So, but that's, I hear,
and you saw the Pacific, right? I mean, it's like that, but airplanes over the Atlantic.
Yeah.
It's what it is. very well made.
A longer title, but yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's my Apple stuff. And then the other stuff, Hacks came back this year.
Okay.
Immaculate. I think that is a great show. Just perfect casting, good writing. That's people from the Mike Schur factory doing that show. And he's got a credit on it, but like it's people who he mentored who are doing that show. But that's just a very funny and also kind of cutting show about comedy and television that I really love it.
Yeah. I'm behind on it. I did like it though a lot. Yeah.
I just read down at the bottom of the list, but I think enough worth mentioning is I just finished A Man on the Inside. Speaking of Mike Schur, that's his Netflix show with Ted Danson.
Oh yeah. That's just really new. I didn't even.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I was not motivated to watch that, but
it's funny and sweet. It's, I guess what I would say is like, it's like Only Murders in the Building, except softer.
Oh, okay. See, this is probably why I didn't watch it, because you know, you and I, you have pointed out many times to me, or at least a couple of times, very hilariously, that I don't like Murders in the Building because I like more dark stuff.
And
you're always like, well, of course you don't like that. You like super dark stuff, and it's not even fair that you want to do that. So I think that's what I got from.
Did you watch Afterlife, the Ricky Gervais?
I did. I loved that series.
Okay. Well, this is the thing is, I think that A Man on the Inside is the most like that show.
Oh, Okay.
Because the darkness in it is, it's set at an old age home. And Ted Danson is like a spy who's, you know, basically he's been sent in by a private detective to investigate a crime. And that leads to jokes that are funny. But it doesn't shy away from, like, it's a show about grief. His wife just died. She had been in a she was going to go into memory care. She died of complications of Alzheimer's. There's a memory care facility inside this building. There are some people who are kind of on their way there. Other people are sort of feeling unrooted and their kids don't pay attention to them. And it's got a kind of emotional darkness to it that's kind of grappling with the light. It's a very Mike Schur in the sense that you're sort of like grappling with these issues of life while also having jokes. But right. I thought it did a good job. Also, San Francisco.
I think, right? He handles that duality very well.
He does. And it's set in San Francisco with a surprisingly good set of location shots that make the city feel like it's really part of the show, including on an episode that's got a big chunk that's at Oracle Park, which is cool. They did a good job with the San Francisco aspect of it too.
Nice. So
I'll throw that on the pile. And then I've got a couple more. This is out of the blue, but it is a Hulu show. I kind of can't believe I'm saying it, but you'll appreciate this because, you know, Letterkenny left us.
Yes.
The wonderful Jared Kiso produced filthy while being incredibly literate comedy about Hicks in Canada. But they did that spinoff Shoresy about the hockey players.
Uh-huh.
Season 2 came out this year. It's brilliant.
I haven't even watched it.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It took me season 1 I was lukewarm on. Okay. Season 2 I'm like, "No, this is actually like Ted Lasso with more like with busted teeth." Where is it?
Is
it Hulu?
Oh, Hulu. Okay.
It's Hulu along with Letterkenny.
Okay.
So they've done 2 seasons of Shoresy. And like, first off, if you haven't seen Letterkenny, you should watch it. It's brilliant. But I loved Shoresy. I think it's a very, of all the characters spin off of Letterkenny, Shoresy, who is just is like a gag in Letterkenny. Yeah. But in this, he's a real character. And you put those 2 seasons together and there's like, just like with Letterkenny, you've got kind of bananas, just wild comedy, wild like violence of like in this sports violence, but it's really got a heart. I think that's the most important thing, is that in the end it's a show with a huge amount of heart. It's a show that can manage to be about sex and relationships while also being pretty feminist. I have those moments where like you see, just like in Letterkenny, where you're like, you see women who are scantily clad and you're like, am I uncomfortable about this? And then immediately it's like, no, this is actually very feminist in its outlook, which is kind of an interesting combination. Anyway, Shoresy, it's good. It's really good. Season 2 was great.
Wow. All right. See, like I hadn't, the beauty of doing this, you know, I want to say like on a part-time, but it's not a hobby kind of thing. I'm still obviously.
Yeah, but you're not on the treadmill like you were at THR.
I'm not on the treadmill. Like I told somebody that like, I can't wait to actually assemble my year-end lists because I don't follow any of, I won't be following any of the rules that I did for so many years when I made really, really long lists, which I loved to do. And they were very time consuming, but it was sort of indicative of how much time you spend as a critic. And, you know, I don't know how many years ago it was when we all decided, okay, we honestly have to just admit that we can't watch everything. So our lists have to kind of reflect the fact that we didn't see like a Shoresy, or you didn't see, you know, whatever series, and God forbid the international stuff. I don't think a lot of mainstream critics weren't even watching that. But I think that for me, I'm loving the idea of doing this year end list, because it's also like what I watched this year. It doesn't actually have to be made in 2024 because
right, that's true.
How I approach television, that there's
like moving. Know,
we're drowning, right? I say that all the time. We're drowning in content. It's peak TV. And people just, particularly international fare, you just kind of stumble on it. Somebody recommends it because they saw it. It's often not in the algorithm of any channel you're watching.
Right. So you'll never see it.
You'll never see it. Like, good luck finding, you know, Moving on Hulu. You really have to, like, You just have to type the show name to find it. So when mine comes out, I think it's going to be much more of a, you know, I'm assembling it now and I know kind of know where it's going, but I'm going to have shows that did not appear in 2024.
That's fine.
And I'm okay with that because
that's good. It's things you discovered in 2024. That's all that matters, yeah, I think.
That's all that matters. Like, I watched it in 2024, and, you know, some people haven't even watched The Wire yet.
Mm, it's true. You know?
And so I think time is a flat circle, Jason. So it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Steppenwolf put that, the new True Detective on his best of list. So there you go. Speaking of time being a flat circle, which was
one at night in the dark.
Night Country.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, with Jodie Foster. I don't know.
We're going to agree to disagree on that one. One of my readers said that Dan Feinberg, my friend and fellow critic at THR, was sort of like lukewarm on and then dismissive of whether it's engaging of Black Doves. And, you know, I don't agree with that either. So, you know,
like everybody's got
a thing.
Everybody's got things.
I'll give you a quick list of what I'm thinking.
Let's do it.
Because it's coming from the more international angle. That's really where I found myself leaning into this year and finding so much good stuff. I didn't stop. So I would say that the ones that are up for consideration at the top, I haven't picked one yet. And I definitely liked Shogun. So I was a fan of that. But House of Ninjas on Netflix. Is so much fun. It's really well done. It's just sort of endearing and action-packed and creatively interesting. It's a multi-dimensional, multi-generational series about ninjas.
About ninjas, yeah, there you go.
Like a family of ninjas. Shinobis, and that's where I was learning the term of the shinobis, where they're the ninjas that you don't ever see coming.
Ah, it's the best kind.
That was fantastic. I couldn't get enough of that. And then Netflix, that was on Netflix, and Netflix also had A Shop for Killers, and that is a Korean series that I'm very action packed. And, you know, I've been drawn to some of these that are, I mean, House of Ninjas has action in it, but it's not like gruesome. There's other ones that are pretty gruesome, but not House of Ninjas. Shop for Killers is pretty gruesome, but, just a great story, unbelievably well told. And then you start to love all these characters, some, you know, badass assassins, and just also the kind of a dark story where as you're kind of telling it, you're like, wow, this is bleaker than I thought. Some really good performances from especially like younger people. You wouldn't think they'd pull it off.
Looks like that's a Hulu, that one.
Yeah, that's that one's Is Shop for Killers on Hulu?
I think it looks like.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're on Hulu, then you can also track down Moving,
right?
Which was good, and then the other that's going to be high on my list. That's a Korean series. That's actually probably going to be really high. And then, certainly a more darker, but just, like a suspenseful dark, like, what is this show trying to do? And what are they getting at? Which is part of the appeal of the international series. The Frog also on Netflix, was really good. They don't do a great job of explaining what the frog is, or a frog. But you get it. You know, you kind of get why that's the title. So it's not a terrible title given, you know, what we just talked about. But yeah, I just like The Frog was good. A Shop for Killers, House of Ninjas, Moving. Those are all, you know, three of those are from Korea. One's from Japan. And then I think Cleo season 2, I don't know if you ever got around to watching that from Germany.
No.
Cleo I really liked. Cleo is a German series that's a little bit like Killing Eve, set in the first season is set in East Berlin. And you know, you would not think the Germans are known for their sense of humor, but it's very good. And season 2 leans in because that's the fall of the Berlin Wall and the unification. it becomes funnier and quirkier and weirder. And I'm just like, man, I wish I had seen something this creative on American television.
Huh.
And yeah. So it's
wow.
Big fan of Cleo, K-L-E-O on Netflix.
Mm-hmm, on Netflix.
Yeah. So that's kind of it, but there's tons of other stuff. There's the, I really loved Black Twitter, the documentary that was on Hulu about Twitter. I thought that was just such culturally spot on. And, I like Black Doves. I like, Slow Horses and Diplomat. There's a lot of good stuff. I don't know what's going to end up on the list. Some of it's just going to be like fun, but definitely those Korean series are going to be there.
Nice.
And also Shogun.
Great.
Well, and also, like, just really quickly, right? I mean, I'm not wrong. I mean, I'm not incorrect in that 2024 did see Fargo. So that was, I mean, there was, that might be end up being number one. Who knows? So a lot of choices.
That's, I mean, I guess it really depends on when you see it. It was one of those things that started late last year and then ended early this year. So.
Yeah, ended in 2024. So see, yeah. I watched in 2024. It counts for me.
It counts. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
If it's whatever rules you want now, you make the rules.
I do. That's why you take a pay cut and add more free time and five different jobs to your list of any things to do.
Been there.
Yeah. I know you have. You're five different jobs.
timgoodman.substack.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's free stuff. And then there's stuff you got to pay for that lets Tim, he can't just secretly review TV shows for the insiders. He's you got to give him some support there too.
That's true.
This has been great. Thank you for being on my, my downstream holiday special where it's just good to talk to you again. We used to do it every week. And it's been a while, so
I really love being able to talk to you again. And I want to take the chance to say thank you for, working your magic to turn my two Christmas lists in from Spotify into Apple.
Oh, yes, of course. People should check those out. They're great.
Yeah.
I'll put those in the show notes again, I threatened to earlier. But, like, they're really, I love that you curated, and they're huge lists, too. You literally just put it on and shuffle and then walk away.
Yeah, come back in a month.
And it will fill your house with Christmas music. It's great. So that's the end of this episode. As Christmas gift to you last weekend or last episode in this episode, full size for everybody. Our next episode, the only way you'll be able to hear the complete version would be to subscribe to Downstream Plus. You go to downstream.plus. It's right like in the name, right? It is. And you'll be able to get it. And you'll be able to support the show. You can find me, sixcolors.com, many podcasts here at Relay and at theincomparable.com. And that's it. Tim, until next time, love to your mothers.
Love to your mothers, Jason. Anytime you need to fill in, let me know.
You got it.
All right, man.
I'll see you in the new year.